Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Really grateful you guys are listening to the pod. I would love it if you could take just 5 seconds to leave a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you might be listening to this. It really goes a long way to spread the message, which would allow me to get better guests to add more value to your life. And if you're one of the special people that have helped spread the word on this podcast, I am deeply appreciative of your support. Enjoy the episode.
Right.
Does that mean you need to fast? You can get into that state faster because you don't need to burn glucose in order to start burning ketones or fat?
Yeah. So if you start with a very low carbohydrate diet, then you're not going to store that much glycogen. So then you could actually go into this sort of ketogenic state or fat burning state much faster. You don't even need to fast to get into this fat burning stage. But you know, obviously it's not the easiest diet to follow long term because it's a very, very low carbohydrate diet.
Jason Funk, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, I was really interested in coming on. I know you went on one of my friends, Lewis Howes's podcast, and really enjoyed that episode about, you know, just given my history of fasting, I just was so fascinated to ask you and pick your brain around the benefits and, you know, really just the idea of this kind of this misconception that people have, I think, around fasting as well. So thanks again for coming on here.
Oh, no problem.
So I initially actually started fasting in New York. I was in my early 20s and I didn't have any money. So I would just skip meals because that just made sense to me, you know, 60% instead of 100% that I would spend eating three meals a day. And for whatever reason, I just had more energy and more clarity when I was thinking. So I actually got into the science and researched it and realized like it was this whole thing. But of course, there's this origin even beyond, it just kind of comes in, you know, maybe thousands of years ago, right? It's in the Bible. It's in many religious cultures. What are some of the historical origins of fasting from, you know, some of the things that you've known?
Yeah, I mean, probably, it's been obviously been around since the sort of dawn of humanity sort of thing, mostly probably because that like food wasn't always available. So they ate when there's food, and when there's no food, well, you didn't eat, which was essentially fasting. As you get into the sort of civilization, so we know for sure, and mainly we only know because of certain religious texts, do mention that quite a lot. So if you look at the Bible, for example, but you can go to other beliefs, old religions, just Hinduism and Buddhism, for example. And obviously they have very, very strong fasting traditions as well. But I'm not that familiar with those. So, but if you look at sort of Catholicism and so on, it's everywhere in the Bible. Like there's all these periods of fasting that you're supposed to have, whether it's Good Friday, you can see in the Jewish, Yom Kippur, you're supposed to fast. And then there's Ramadan and the Muslim tradition. So certainly at least for 2000 years, we know that people have been fasting, not because food was not available, but because food is available, but they choose not to eat it for whatever reason. Obviously, it's a lot of spiritual things, a lot of religious things. But by at least 2000 years ago, you had people who would be like, yes, there's food there, but I won't eat it because of my beliefs. You know, we know from the ancient Greek writings, for example, a lot of proponents there, sort of Pythagoras, one of the very famous mathematicians, and so on. So we know it's been used for thousands of years, and it's sure. It's an interesting thing because you say, you know, you said that you did notice you had a lot more energy and concentrated a lot better, and in fact, that's backed up really by what happens in the human body when you don't eat. And it's interesting because it is such a misconception, because people think the opposite. They think you can't work and that you will have no energy. But that's not what happens. You know, the body, to put it very simply, has a storage compartment. So when you eat, you take in food energy, which is calories. Calories are not available all the time. So your body has a storage system for those calories. When you know, when you're eating, you can use the food that you're eating, the energy from that food. But when you're not eating, you will store some of that away. You can store it in the form of glucose, which is you know, in the liver, glycogen, and you can store calories in the form of body fat, right? So those are the four, sugar and fat, is the way that our body stores energy. And you store it so that you will have energy when you're not eating. That's how you survive. That's why you don't die in your sleep every single night, because you can store calories. When you don't eat, what happens is that you allow the body to lower the insulin. And when insulin goes down, then you sort of open the doors on the storage, right? So, you know, you might imagine that you have a storage shed and the door is closed, you can't get at that whatever's in there, right? But if you open that door, and that's what fasting does, it allows your insulin to fall so you can get at that storage, then you're going to take the calories that you need from your body fat. And that's it. So in fact, there's no decrease in energy because body has all the energy stored away already. And even people who are very slender still have, you know, 10% body fat, for example. That's actually very low. I mean, you'll look ripped if you're at 5%. You know, you'll look kexic at 4 or 5%, actually. 10%, you'll look pretty ripped. Most people are at 20, 25%.
Right.
So even a 150-pound person will have 10% body fat. Like, they have, you know, they look like they have no fat, but at 10%, that's still 15 pounds of body fat that they're still carrying. So a huge number of calories. Even at that, 15 pounds at 3,500 calories per pound of fat as a rough estimate, you're still talking about tens of thousands of calories that you're storing on your body, even in somebody who looks totally like they have no body fat at all. So, right. So there's tons of energy there. There's a reason why your brain should, you know, slow down, or you should have no energy. And in fact, if you look at sort of the physiology of what happens when you don't eat, not only does your insulin go down, so your body now has access to all the stored calories, but it actually increases other hormones. And these are the so-called counter-regulatory hormones. And that includes noradrenaline and increased activation of your sympathetic nervous system. So your sympathetic nervous system is the system. So there's two sort of autonomic nervous systems. There's the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. So sympathetic is basically what energizes you and gets you ready for action. So it's also sometimes called the fight or flight response. So if you, you know, get in a period of high stress, you see a lion or something, your body actually goes into this fight or flight response, activates the sympathetic nervous system, floods the body with energy so that you can fight or run away. That's the same system that you're activating during fasting. So when, you know, your body's not shutting down, it's actually ramping itself up during fasting. And that's why people actually find that they have more energy. And where's the energy coming from? Well, it's coming from your body fat. Well, that's great in a couple of ways, right? You have more energy and you're using your body fat. And the other thing is that it increases the ability to concentrate, to ability to memorize, so your mental function actually goes way, way up. And this has actually been noticed for many years. So, you know, Pythagoras, in fact, when he was studying for his exams, he wrote that he would fast because he found that his brain just worked so much better in the fasted state. And he would actually require his students to fast so that they learn that material. And there's a biography about these World War II prisoners of war in Japan who were literally starving. They ate nothing. There was no food available. So it wasn't fasting, right, but it was starvation. And the difference, of course, being voluntary, right? So starvation is involuntary. You can't eat food even if you want to. Fasting is there is food available. You just choose not to eat it. So these people were starving, literally starving. And what they noticed in this book, Unbroken by Lauren Hillebrand, this biography, is that he noticed that everybody around him were doing these incredible feats. So he would describe this person who learned Norwegian in a week, incredible. And he described another prisoner of war who would be reading books practically verbatim. Oh, my memory. It was and there's this one line in it that I thought was interesting. He said, "That's just the astonishing mental clarity of starvation." So with people starving all around him, he was observing people doing incredible mental feats. And it was just so regular. He was just like, yeah, that's just what starvation does to you. It makes your brain work better, right? It's like, whoa, that's completely opposite of what everybody expects. Everybody says, well, I have to work. I have to concentrate. So I must eat. No. Your brain will actually work better if you're fasting, because that's just the way the human body is. You're going to pump up your noradrenaline, you're going to activate your sympathetic nervous system, and therefore you're going to have more energy and more concentration. And even for yourself, people get this crazy idea only because people tell you so. But if you think about it, it's true. After Thanksgiving meal, had a huge meal. Not mentally super sharp, right? You're a bit groggy. You got that food coma. You just want to sit down and watch TV, right? And in the animal world, for example, you look and you say, well, do you want to be that lion that just ate, a little bit wonky, a little bit woozy, or do you want to be the hungry wolf? The hungry wolf is not falling over and unable concentrate, right? He's zoned in and ready to kill you, right? And that's the point. You want to be the hungry wolf, but it's the hunger. It's that sort of fasting state that is making him much sharper than usual. So that's what fasting does. And I think that's absolutely fascinating because people understood this, thousands of years ago, that something happens when you fast that's actually very, very good. So it was always considered this good thing to fast, right? It was always like sort of purification, right? You're getting rid of that excess sugar. You're getting rid of fat. It would help in other ways. So fasting was always a good thing. And then you get to the last sort of 35 years where people were like, oh, you have to eat all the time. You must eat the minute you get up and eat 10 or 12 meals a day, eat small meals all throughout the day, and basically don't stop eating until you go to sleep, right? And we told people that it was healthy for you. It's like, but why would that be healthy? It's like, you're never getting into that fasted state. That is, if you're feeding, when you're feeding, your insulin is up, you're going to store calories. That's what you do. It's only when you don't eat that those calories that you ate are going to come back out so that you use them. So if you want to lose weight, you just need to increase the amount of time that you're using the calories stored on your own body, because that is literally no other reason to store those calories. So fasting is not some crazy idea. So you have to understand that when I started talking about fasting, 2013, 2014, people thought I was insane. They really thought I was crazy. They thought people would die. They thought people would it was hysterical. People really thought that this natural state that we're supposed to go in was going to kill us. And if we went into this fasted state, which we're supposed to do every so often, right? That's the word breakfast, break your fast, right? You're supposed to fast every day. They thought that that would actually be hugely detrimental even if you were 500 pounds, it was insane. It was a complete, like it was totally like no science there at all. They ignored sort of basic first year medical student physiology. You know, it was crazy. They really thought people would die.
Even the person, I mean, I would imagine the person that is 300, 400, 500 pounds is going to even think it's crazier to even fast because the way they got there was to eat all the time. So the idea of not eating is just so counterintuitive to the way they've been living their entire lives. I can totally see that, but it is very counterintuitive. But I love the benefits that you mentioned. Autophagy is another one that is one of the major benefits of the idea of like recycling mitochondria in your cells. Can you talk to us a little bit about the breakdown of what happens, you know, beyond just energy, but the actual cleansing that happens in our bodies when we're fasting?
Yeah, and this is sort of a much more recent research. And what's autophagy is the one of the main sort of researchers won the, I think is he won a Nobel Prize in physiology for this research. It's that important.
Wow.
And what it is, it's where the body will break down certain proteins. And that sounds really bad. Like everybody, oh, you're breaking down proteins. That's really bad. But it's not actually. So it's a cellular recycling system. So what you do is you break down the protein. And then when you have food, then you're going to build whatever proteins that you need back. So that's the process of autophagy. So if you think about this entire process of breaking down and rebuilding, it's actually a process of rejuvenation, right? Mm. So if you think about, you know, you want to renovate your house, or for example, you want to, you know, change up your bathroom. The first thing you have to do is rip everything out. Like, you can't do anything until you rip the other stuff out, right? If you have that, you know, avocado green 1970s tub and a sink and a toilet, you can't just put in a new bathroom. Right? You have an old bathtub sitting there. So the entire process of rejuvenation begins with a destructive process. You've got to get rid of the old stuff before you get the new stuff put in, right? But the entire process, so if you look at just the, if you look at the destructive part of things, you'd say, oh, that's really bad. But it's not, because you're missing the whole part where you're rebuilding, right? So you rip out the old tub, you put in a new tub, you put in marble sinks and stuff, and it's beautiful, right? But you couldn't do that unless you started with breaking it down. And that's what autophagy is. So you know, when you fast, so when you don't eat anything, what happens at around 18 hours to 24, 30 hours, something like that, is that your body actually starts. So in the first part of fasting, after you eat, so 4 hours you're eating, you get into the fasted state, you start burning sugar. Once you start into that 18 hour, in the 4 hour period, you actually start to break down protein. And this is called gluconeogenesis. And this is one of the reasons people used to say, oh, you should never fast, you're breaking down proteins. It's like, okay, the body's not that stupid that it's going to start breaking down vital proteins when you have all this sugar and all this fat sitting around, right? It's just not that stupid. We didn't survive to become the dominant species by being that stupid. So what we do is actually you break down this protein, right? And then the other thing is that growth hormone goes through the roof when you fast. So if you look at fasting, growth hormone goes up by about a factor of 5 times at 24 hours. So by the time you've broken it all down, your growth hormone's really high. If you eat again, then your body is already primed to start building. And that's the whole process. You break down the old junk proteins, then you eat, and then you rebuild it. But you can only get there if you're having a proper fasted period of, you know, somewhere around 18 to 24 hours. It's mostly depends on protein, actually. So protein is the main controller of this sort of autophagy. So sure. A lot of people are very interested in this because, of course, it's a way to combat some of the diseases that you see in older people. So, for example, Alzheimer's disease, terrible disease. You know, and whether something like fasting might be able to help in that or with other neurologic diseases, it's a good question. We don't have the good research into that, but certainly it's a way to get there. So, you know, other than the sort of more obvious benefits of fasting, like weight loss and control of diabetes and things like that, autophagy is just this, you know, it's one of these wellness things that you can do for yourself. And, sure. Remember, like this is stuff that's free. Like nobody's trying to make a buck off of you. When you don't eat, you don't eat. Like there's no money being made by anybody.
You save money, right?
You save money. Exactly. And so this is an intervention that's completely free. It's available to everybody in the world, like right now, like literally this minute. And it's been used for thousands of years as a very traditional wellness practice. So it's not like I just made it up. It's not like nobody has ever done this before. Because sometimes you get these crazy, you know, fads out there that are like, oh, you should eat this and this and this. And it's some strange, you know, herb or something like that. Well, it's like, but it's not been used. Like that's what this is. This is literally the oldest dietary intervention in the book. It's been used for thousands of years. It's been enshrined into almost every religion in the world for a reason, right? Like the heads of these religions, they're not trying to kill their practitioners here. They're trying to make sure they survive to spread that religion around. So, you know, and now science is just catching up. It's like, oh, hey, not only are there benefits for weight loss and type 2 diabetes, but of course there was no concern about that, you know, 2000 years ago, like obesity was just practically not an issue. But nevertheless, people had learned, you know, probably through trial and error, that people who fast regularly actually are much healthier than if you don't. And why? Well, autophagy might be a very good reason why people are better. You're sort of giving your cells a cycle. It's like, that's better than, and yet, you know, if you eat all the time, you're going to turn off this autophagy all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. The unfortunate state of where the, you know, the capitalistic society that we're living in is that trillions of dollars are being spent to help people, to get people to eat and drink, because that's where money's made. And fasting, as you mentioned, is helping people save money. And actually not spend any money into the economy. So yeah, it is unfortunate. You mentioned intermittent fasting, certainly releasing autophagy after 18 hours or 24 hours. There's also prolonged fasting. Can you talk about the differences of the two just at a high level, and also what happens to the body after prolonged, which I believe is 48 hours or more, right?
Yeah. So, there's certain stages of intermittent fasting. I covered it actually. I have a YouTube channel. If people are interested, they can.
Yes, it's very helpful.
There's one of the videos spoke the five stages of intermittent fasting, and it's interesting because that way you know what you should be targeting, right? So the first stage is feeding. So at 4 hours, you're eating. Insulin is up. Your cells are using the energy that you're taking. Then you get into this period where you're going to be using sugar as your main source of energy, right? So when you eat, and assuming you're eating sort of 50% carbohydrates, which is a sort of a standard diet, you'll be using the sugar. Your body has stored away some sugar in the liver as glycogen. So when you take glucose, so glucose is the, when you eat carbohydrates, it's a lot of glucose. When you eat bread, there's a lot of glucose in there. The liver takes this glucose, strings it all together, and stores it as a molecule called glycogen. So when you have nothing to eat, from 4 to about, say, 20 hours, your body is going to take the glycogen, chop it up and back up into glucose, and just send it out. And your body is going to be using glucose. By about, 18 to 24, 30 hours or so, the glycogen is starting to run out. So your body's going to take some protein, and that's the autophagy. So it's going to start to take some protein and basically turn it into glucose and send it out for energy. Mm. When you get past about 24, 30 hours, then there's no more glucose Now your body has to switch over into its second source of energy. So your body runs either on glucose or fat. If glucose is around, they'll use glucose. But when there's no glucose around, it's going to switch over into using body fat. So body fat is a molecule called triglycerides. And essentially the triglycerides get delivered into the liver, and the most of the cells in the body, your kidneys, your heart, your lungs, your muscles, they can all use triglycerides directly. So your muscles will switch over from burning sugar to burning fat. The brain can't use that, so it uses the ketones. Your liver takes the triglycerides, turns them into ketones, which now cross the blood-brain barrier, goes to the brain, and your brain can use those ketones. So what is happening when you get to prolonged fasting is essentially this switch from burning sugar to burning fat. It's just a different source of energy. Now, if you follow a ketogenic diet, for example, where you eat almost zero carbs, you can't burn sugar because you have no sugar. So you're just trying to stay in this sort of fat burning stage. It's the source of energy, right?
Does that mean you need to fast? You can get into that state faster because you don't need to burn glucose in order to start burning ketones or fat?
Yeah. So if you start with a very low carbohydrate diet, then you're not going to store that much glycogen. So then you could actually go into this sort of ketogenic state or fat burning state much faster. You don't even need to fast to get into this fat burning stage. But you know, obviously it's not the easiest diet to follow long term because it's a very, very low carbohydrate diet. So, but there's nothing wrong with it generally. So that's the stage. So when you get into more extended fasting, so assuming you're eating a sort of standard diet of 50% carbohydrates, for example, then that's what the extended fasting does. It gets you into the stage where you're just burning fat. And it's great because there's two things that happen. One is that the hunger starts to go down, which is great, like with the extended fasting. Everybody thinks hunger goes up and up and up until you just can't take it anymore. But when you start doing extended fasting and you start doing measurements of people's ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, or you simply ask them, how hungry are you? What's interesting is that hunger tends to peak at, you know, somewhere around 1 to 2 days. So if you're doing, say, a 7-day fast, right? And some people do these 7-day fasts and 30-day fasts and stuff. You read about them sometimes. The reason they're able to do it is because the hunger has started to dissipate by day 4, day 5. You know, by day 1, day 2, you're hungry. And you're at the stage where it's like, I'm never going to be able to do this. By day 5, day 6, you're like, I could do this forever. And the reason is that your body is supplying all the energy it needs, and the hunger has gone down. Again, these are all protective mechanisms. So you have to think about it from an evolutionary standpoint. So imagine that you're a cave woman, and it's winter, and there's nothing to eat. Well, you know, your body, you know, is very, very smart, right? We assume the body is stupid, but the body is extremely smart. So there's two choices here. Like if our body started to shut down and, you know, just be hungry all the time, first, your body shutting down, it's going to be even harder to get food because you have no energy, right? And two, you'd be miserable, like completely miserable, because you're just hungry all the time while you're lying on the couch, unable to get up because you have no energy, right? Then you'd die and we'd not be here, right? Like our body is just not that stupid, right? What happens is that your body simply switches fuel sources. It says, well, no food is available, so let's switch from the food that you're eating to the stored food in your body fat. And then it ramps it up. It says, I'm going to give you a ton here. I'm going to sharpen your focus, give you a ton of energy so that you can go out and get food. If there's still no food available, like after 5 days or 6 days, which could happen, you know, 1,000 years ago, then your body just starts to decrease your hunger level. So you're not constantly distracted by how hungry you are. It's like, focus on getting some food, people, right? So the body is so extremely smart. Like, we make the assumption that our body's so stupid that if we didn't do something, like if we didn't eat breakfast, we'd die, sort of thing. Like, your body has this taken care of. That's how we survived these 2,000, you know, these 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years, not by being stupid. So because hunger is going down in an extended fast, it does, you know, two things. One is that it's easier to do. And two, you're already in that fat burning mode. So you're burning almost pure fat, which is great. And three, it actually keeps your metabolic rate up, which is, everybody thinks, again, the complete opposite. If you measure how much energy people are burning, you know, and you can put them, you know, at day zero, you measure how much, this is your metabolic rate, how much energy are you burning? How many calories are you burning? And then measure them after 4 days of nothing to eat. At 4 days of nothing to eat, the number of calories you burn has actually increased by 10%. Increased. So everybody thinks that your body's going to shut down. You're going to go into this starvation mode where, you know, you're burning less calories. You're not. You're burning more calories because the body has ramped itself up. It's all these counter-regulatory hormones. Your body's giving you energy to get out there and get food. But the side effect of that is that you're burning more energy. If you're trying to lose fat, you're losing fat at a faster rate once you start getting into the 3, 4, 5 days. And the whole thing is quite interesting because we have surgeries, and this is for weight loss. This is for morbidly obese people. So overweight that their health is severely impacted. We do this bariatric surgery for people where we cut their stomach to the size of like a walnut. And then we rewire their intestine, so whatever gets in doesn't get absorbed. It comes out through their stools. So essentially, you're making sure, you're surgically enforcing that they're not getting any food, which is fasting. And people do extremely well with these bariatric surgeries, sure. Right? But it's like, if you do well with that, why couldn't you simply fast instead of
without needing the surgery?
Stomach, yeah. Right? And the answer, of course, is that there's a lot of money to be made in surgery.
Yeah, back
and there's
to the
no money to be made in fasting, right? So yeah. So the enthusiasm after surgery for the last 10 years has been through the roof in the medical community. Everybody, oh, we need to do more of this. We need to do more stomach stapling and all this stuff. And the enthusiasm for fasting has been like zero in the medical community because there's nobody pushing it, right? Mm. There's nobody giving lectures on it. But if in fact, cutting your stomach so that you can fast, why don't you just fast instead? Like, it's just a way healthier way to do it. If you had no other options, sure. But we do have options, right? We can do this, right? Everybody has that willpower. And that's you know, that's essentially the same physiology, and we know that it works very well. But the good thing is that we can take advantage of that.
Now, circling back to the differences of intermittent fasting and the prolonged fasting, which starts at that 48-hour mark, are there any studies done that shows a kind of, you know, a return depending on how long you do the fasting? Meaning, is there a diminishing marginal return the longer you fast? So let's say at 12 hours you fast. If you do 24 hours, I imagine there's still maybe not a 2x gain, but still a very big gain. But where does this start to taper off the returns that you get?
Yeah, it actually doesn't really. So depending on what you're doing, right? So if you're talking about autophagy, it only happens for a very short period of time because you can't just keep burning protein. So again, the body is so much smarter than we give it credit for. You don't want to keep, so say you do a 7-day fast. You don't want to burn protein from, you know, 18 hours all the way until 7 days, because remember, it's a cycle. You want to break down and then you want to build. So if you don't, you're not going to get into that building phase, the body shuts that down. It doesn't break down anymore. So again, if you look at the sort of 5 stages of fasting, you start by burning sugar. Then you have this small period where you're burning protein, when you get into 36, 48 hours, the protein burning, the sugar is gone. The protein burning has essentially stopped and you're just burning body fat because that's how you stored those calories. So there's, and that just goes on. So from about 48 hours onward, every day is the same. You're just pulling calories out of body fat. You know, hunger starts to go down, but all those other things don't keep going because it's going to be bad for you if you keep doing autophagy, right? So there's no upper limit for weight loss though, because you're still burning the same amount. And you know, your energy expenditure, the number of calories you burn, is not going to keep going up. So at about 10% higher than your baseline, but it plateaus and it just keeps going. So every day, so say on a normal day, you're burning 2000 calories during fasting, you might go up to 2100, for example, and you just stay at that level for 7 days, 30 days until your body fat really starts to run down too low. Then the body again is very smart and is going to shut it down. But if you're sort of, you know, if you have an excess, you know, body fat and you're trying to lose it, if you think about how many pounds of fat you can burn in a day of fasting, it's only about a half a pound a day. A pound of fat is roughly 3,500 calories. You're using about, say, 2,000, 1,800, 2,000. That's only a half a pound of fat. That's not a lot. So if you want to lose 10 pounds of body fat, then 20 days of fasting to lose that, right? It's a lot. Not a lot of people go 20 days fasting. You can if you want, but at a certain point, your body, it does start to lower that because it's like, I can't keep this up. If you only have a few days left of body fat in your stores, you're going to start shutting down. So, but again, because I'm a physician, I deal mostly with people on the far extreme part of like, they have 120 pounds, 150 pounds to lose, for example. So, you know, if you're trying to lose 100 pounds, you could go 200 days. You could go more than half a year without eating, right? Now, I would never tell people to do that. It's a little bit like, I tend to take it slower so that you don't run into problems. But you could theoretically go like half a year without eating.
Wow.
And still be
fine. Have you seen someone that do that?
No, I mean, that's a long time. I've had people who do like 30 days and so on, but generally no. And that's 15 pounds expected body weight loss. But there are descriptions. So the world record for longest fast was 382 days. Like that's a year.
Oh my God.
And this is crazy. So, and this happened in the 1970s. It was monitored by some physicians. Then they wrote it up. So this guy, he didn't eat for 382 days. And we are worried if you don't go more than 3 hours without eating, right? People will tell you, you must eat. You have to have breakfast because it's been 2 hours. It's like, yeah, this guy went 300 plus days. We're worried about like 3 hours. Like there's a huge discrepancy here between what is actually true and what is not true. So I mean, there's no sort of upper limit. The you know, if you are overweight, then yeah, you can do well. All the time they get off their medications for type 2 diabetes, for example. You know, I've written a couple of research publications about that. You know, they lose the weight, they come off their blood pressure medications, they come off their cholesterol medications. So they get so much healthier, having lost that weight, because again, we're in a period where most of our health problems in Canada, North America are because of overweight, not underweight. So, you know, for us, it's a better intervention to be doing.
So this guy that fasted for 380 days, you said 360 days?
Yeah, 380, I think.
What was the difference? Like, what state was he in before he got into that fasting mode?
Well, he was severely overweight. I think he was like 400 plus pounds, right?
So, oh, wow. Okay.
He had a lot of body fat to live off of. It's, you know, and bears do it all the time. They hibernate all winter and just live off their body fat. But that's what body fat is for. So if you are overweight, then yeah, you can live off your body fat. That's what we're trying to get people to do. We're trying to get them to use those stores of calories, because that's all it is. It's a storage. It's like your basement, right? When you stick stuff into that basement freezer, that's there for you to use. If you just keep sticking stuff in your freezer and not using it, well, soon it's going to be full, and then it's going to spill over, and then you're going to get sick. We're just telling people, you want to use, let your body use it up. Like, it's not fun or anything, right? That's why, you know, people need help doing it and stuff. And but you have to have the knowledge. Whereas it was such a strange period of time before, like in the, you know, when I started talking about fasting and everybody thought I was insane. It's such so strange, because we'd be telling people, you know, who are like 400 pounds, you need to eat all the time to lose weight. Like, does that even make any sense? Like, at all? It's like, oh, you got to jump in the shower to dry off. It's like, you can't lose weight by eating. It's actually completely impossible.
Yeah, the only way.
Exactly. But that's what dietitians were saying. That's what doctors were saying. You must eat all the time to lose weight. And if you don't eat all the time, if you decide to skip a meal, you're going to gain weight. I'm like, okay, how does that work? Because I'm really puzzled here. If you don't eat, there's actually zero chance you're going to gain weight. It cannot happen unless it's water weight or something, right? But that's what we're telling people. It's complete opposite of what's actually true.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's why the specifics of how to actually do the fasting is so important, because I have friends of mine and, you know, people in my life that have tried it, or I'm sure you've run into situations where they haven't done it properly. So they come back to you and say, you know, I didn't really do anything for me. I don't think this is for me. When in fact they were, I don't know, like, drinking juice in the morning while they were fasting and all these different things. So I guess two follow-ups is, like, what is the minimum, given that most people are actually struggling with fasting rather than trying to do a 300-day fast? What is the minimum required hours of fasting required before you eat again for you to see, for it to be considered, you know, time-restricted and fasting? And what are the things that we cannot eat or what we cannot even drink, I guess, in this case, for us to break the fast?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So first of all, if you think about how people used to eat in the 70s, it's very different than today. So we have lots of surveys which tell us in the 70s, people ate, actually, this is the way I grew up, right? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, no snacks. And nothing after dinner. If you wanted a, you know, before dinner snack, your mom would say, no, you're going to ruin your dinner. If you wanted a bedtime snack, she would say, no, you should have ate more at dinner. So that's the way it was. So you ate breakfast at 8, you ate dinner at 6. That's a 10-hour feeding window and a 14-hour fasting period. Every single day, sort of without fail, sort of, that's the baseline. Okay. So 14 hours of fasting, and obesity is just extremely rare in that period of time. Even though people are eating cookies, they're eating ice cream, like they're eating the same sort of stuff, probably not to the same extent, but they're still eating, you know, they're not watching their diets particularly. And so a 14-hour fasting period is a pretty good sort of baseline for you to be doing. No snacks, 3 meals a day, 14 hours of fasting. And for many people, if you maintain that as your normal, then you can actually do very well and stay relatively thin. Like, obesity rates, of course, in the 70s were just much, much lower. And that, you know, that's why people have the word breakfast, right? It's a meal that breaks your fast, with the implication that fasting is actually just a normal part of everyday life. You feed and then you fast. And the fasting period is when your mom would say, well, you need time to digest, right? That's what people used to say. It completely changed. So by the 90s and 2000s, people had started to eat constantly. And I'll tell you why I think that happened. But when you do surveys, and somebody did a survey just a few years ago, Dr. Panda, he did, gave people an apple tract how often they're eating and so on. turns out the average duration, so the average duration of eating went from 10 hours to about 15 hours. So more than, I think 50% of people are eating more than 15 hours a day. 15 hours a day, you know, just to put it into perspective, it means that you start eating at 8 a.m. and you don't stop eating until 11 p.m., which is, of course, eating as soon as you get up and eating constantly until you go to bed. That's basically the average duration of eating these days. Why? Because doctors and dietitians have been telling people that you know, you can't skip breakfast. You got to get up and eat and have a bedtime snack, and you should graze throughout the day and have small meals through the day. It's like, you know, there's no reason you need to snack. It's not necessary. But it's been so ingrained, like even in the schools, like, you know, my kids, when they're younger, they go on a bus, they go on a field trip, and we'd get these notes saying, please pack your child two snacks. I'm like, why? Are you not going to feed them lunch? Or am I not going to feed them dinner? Like, what's happening here that they need to snack?
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember bringing the kids to soccer, and people would be like, oh, we have to have a snack in the middle of the, between the two halves
That's
of soccer.
So true.
I'm like, why on earth would you want to do that? Like, I played soccer when I was younger, like not formally, but nobody chased me around with juice and cookies. And I had a lot of fun, right? I didn't need to snack. These kids don't need to snack, and we're giving them cookies, right? It's because people believe that you needed to eat all the time. And I think the reason how that came about was that we went from, in the 70s, of government advice to eat an extremely low fat diet. Now, there's no actual scientific evidence, and of course we've totally gone back on that. So, but in the 70s, they said eat low fat. So what happened is that people went from eating sort of bacon and eggs to eating white bread and jam, because white bread and jam is all sugar and no fat. The problem when you do that is that your glucose spikes very high. And then because there, most of that is just refined carbohydrates, then it goes down. You know, your sugar spikes up, then it spikes down. Then you're hungry at 10:30. So you're looking for a snack. You're looking for a low-fat muffin, right? Now high, you know, lots of refined carbs again. Spikes up, spikes down. Then you go have some pasta. And then by 2:30, you're hungry again because your sugar spiked up, spiked down, right? So you're eating constantly because you're hungry. And then people looked at it and said, well, instead of eating three times a day, I'm eating like 6, 7, 8. Because I'm hungry. But then people said, but I'm eating really low fat, so it must be good. So therefore they said, oh, it's actually a good thing that I'm eating 6 times a day, 8 times a day. So then it became sort of this, one of these things that just got out there and never came back to us, that we should be eating 6, 7, 8 times a day, when there's actually no scientific evidence. If we had to eat 6 times a day, again, we wouldn't be here, because, you know, people are not hunting and catching, you know, a deer 6 times a day just to snack on, right? It's a ridiculous thing. That's why you have body fat, so you can store some of it away, that you don't have to keep eating it. It's not like, you know, if we had this equivalent in a car, it'd be like, oh, so we have to go fill up 8 times a day. Well, that's not a very useful car, right? If you're just constantly driving to the gas station.
Totally.
The car, not that stupid. Nobody would design anything that stupid. Same as a human body. You put the fuel in and you store some of it away so that you don't have to keep going back. That's what body fat is. But we sort of lost track of that. So that's why I think you can do very well with like a 14-hour fast, a time-restricted eating, even just 10 hours, as long as you do it consistently. But that's not going to make you lose a lot of weight. It's going to maybe prevent you from gaining a lot of weight, but it's not going to make you lose a lot of weight. So people then start to shrink it into sort of an 8-hour eating window, 4-hour eating window, or sort of one meal a day. Those are all very popular fasting regimens, and you can do extremely well with any of those.
Right. So a good place to start at least is minimum a 10-hour eating window. And that's like, you can build up from there as your body gets used to it more and more. Yeah. What is like the first meal that you recommend people eat once they've gotten out of their fast? So they've done a 14-hour fast. what's like the first thing they should and should not eat?
Yeah. So unless you're doing a really extended fast, like 3, 4, or 5 days, you just eat whatever you normally eat. So remember, when you're fasting, you are going to force your body to basically eat, that is, take the calories from your body fat. So you're trying to make the body eat its own body fat. So therefore, when it's time to eat again, so say you do a one meal a day. So you eat dinner, you want to eat breakfast from your body fat, you want to eat lunch from your body fat. And at dinner time, you want to eat as normally as possible. If you eat sort of breakfast, lunch, and dinner, like the equivalent, like a huge meal, one, it's not that easy because you wind up with like a big stomach ache. And everybody who's done fasting has done that. We've all made that mistake. So you get a big stomach ache, you ate too much at one time, and you don't feel. But you want to eat as normally as possible, because if you don't, if you simply take all of the food that you would have eaten at breakfast, lunch, and dinner all in one meal, well, you're just going to put all into storage, but your storage is not going to go down because you're just putting a huge amount into storage. So you really want to just eat as normally as possible. And if you're doing these shorter fasts, like less than 3 or 4 days, then you don't have to worry about what to eat afterwards. Just eat as normally as you normally would. Try not to overeat. That's the main mistake that I see. And then if you are doing these longer fasts, that's when you have to plan a little bit. And there's certain things. One is that you want to make sure you're not doing this if you're underweight or malnourished or something. But two, you also want to break it a little bit more gently, just to give your body a bit more of a chance to sort of catch up to it. So what I usually tell people to is, one, try to stay away from really highly processed, high carb foods like, you know, bread and so on. Again, you don't want to get those big spikes and stuff. You want to get something that's just going to go in sort of nice and easy over time. Certain things are not, you know, people have a bit more trouble digesting, like nuts, nut butters, for example, just because your digestive system hasn't been working for a while. So you don't want to give it something super complex to handle. So what I often tell people to do is plan to eat sort of a pre-meal. So like 30 minutes before your main meal, then have like a little salad or something that's limited in size and is just there to get the digestive juices sort of going. And that's really only for the long fast. All the shorter ones, which is what most people do now. So in the 60s, when we talked about fasting, people were doing 30 days at a time. Nobody does that anymore, right? It's barely even 30 hours for the most part. It's like 16 to 24 hours is the most popular sort of regimen. You don't have to take any special precautions.
Yeah, I've just been eating my normal breakfast, which people think it's like the craziest thing in the world to eat eggs and like tomatoes and red pepper at like 12 p.m. or 1 p.m. And I mean, I love it. And I actually think people make a mistake of eating too much carbs and sugar when they first start fasting, because what happens is they feel tired after like an hour and they think it's the fasting that made them tired. So they misattribute these different things but it was actually how they broke their fast. So I recommend, I guess, just as you mentioned, just eating what you need to.
Yeah, eggs got a real bad rap for a lot of years because of the cholesterol. It turns out that there's all the studies show that it's actually a very healthy food, like lots of healthy fats, lots of protein. So it's actually a great thing. And if you look at a lot of sort of Asian cultures, you know, they'll have something like, you know, pork and rice, and they'll put an egg on it. It's like delicious.
Yeah,
I think people are really missing something here.
Yeah,
Korean food, they'll like just crack an egg in there, right? It's like, oh, it's great. Like, if you're not used to it, it's like, whoa, this is great.
Yeah, you're missing out, people. Well, Dr. Fung, I really appreciate it. I want to respect your time because I know you have a hard stop here. Where can people learn more about what you're doing. Obviously, your YouTube channel, will link all of that down. Anything else that people can check out to learn more about fasting, nutrition, yourself?
So you can go, I have, so there's the YouTube channel, which there's a lot of videos that are there, and just look under Jason Fung. You should be able to find all of them. You can go on Twitter. My handle is at Dr. Jason Fung. My website is Dr. Jason Fung. That one is spelled D-O-C-T-O-R, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jason Fung. The other one, the other site was taken by some porn site or something. I don't know. It was like when I was trying to get that website, I was like, damn.
Like a penis enlargement doctor or something?
I don't know. There's all these like naked people on that site.
Oh boy.
So okay. I couldn't
don't go to that site, guys. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can if you want to.
Those are all the sites. And then I'm also have a blog also at thefastingmethod.com. So that's a company I helped build. It's basically providing a community for people who are fasting, and also there's coaching there for people who want to do it. Because at the time I started, of course, there was no help for anybody who wanted to fast. Nobody was talking about it. Everybody was trying to tell people not to do it. So we have a community there. There's, you know, discussion boards, and then there's also coaches that are sort of specialized for fasting, really, so that they know what people are going through. So if, you know, it's a great way. So, you know, the tool itself, which is the fasting, is totally free. You know, you can do it yourself if you're able to, but if you need help, then there should be somewhere. And that's at thefastingmethod.com.
Beautiful.
And then there's the books, of course. I've written a few books on that. So there's the Obesity Code, which the Complete Guide to Fasting, the Diabetes Code. The Obesity Code and the Diabetes Code are more science type books. They're really talking about the sort of what happens in the body, how to understand weight loss and reversal of type 2 diabetes. And the Complete Guide to Fasting is more of a practical guide. And the I have also a book called The Cancer Code, which is slightly different. It's more of a science book about what cancer is, which is actually a fascinating topic, actually.
Yeah, a lot of codes. Is that going to be a continuing series, like 5-10 books, different codes?
I think I'm done.
I know how painful the book writing process is. So, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Fasting has certainly made such a big impact in my life and millions of other people. So I hope even just if one person can take action and start the journey of fasting, I think it can make, this episode that we spent time on, I think it can make all the difference. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Jason Fung, and happy fasting.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the show. Hope you really enjoyed our guest today and that you took one thing valuable from our conversation. If you haven't already, I would love it if you could leave a quick rating or review on whichever network you're listening to the show and share this episode with one friend if you found it valuable. And if it's something that a friend, a family member, or just someone that you care about could find a little bit of insight from what you learned today. All right. Ciao.